Hello and welcome everyone to Iowa Ed Chat Live. We are bringing you the latest news from education each month, and we are very pleased to be able to connect with you this evening. We have a very special guest joining us that we will introduce in just a few minutes, but PJ Capozzi is here and he's going to chat with us a little bit about teacher evaluation. And as I said, we will introduce him in just a couple of minutes. As you can see, we will have a live video stream tonight. And in the meantime, you can connect with PJ on Twitter, and he is at, well, anyway, as you can see, we will have a live video stream and we will be taking questions from the audience. So tonight, if you do have a question that you would like to ask PJ, go ahead and tweet that using the Iowa Ed Chat hashtag. That's hashtag IAEdChat. We will monitor this feed, so please do not hesitate to share your thoughts and use your voice. We will get this show on our podcast later tonight, and if you have not checked us out, please do that. You can find us on iTunes or on Podomatic. Please subscribe. Give us a rating today. We would really appreciate that. We're going to start with introductions. I will kick it off. My name is Dan Butler. I am a principal at Epworth Elementary School in the Western Dubuque School District. And I will kick it to my partner in crime, Andrea Townsley.
Hey, everybody. My name is Andrea Townsley. I am a school improvement consultant at the Grantwood AEA 10. I am super excited to welcome PJ Capozzi here with us tonight. I'm going to read a short bio, but I'm super excited to hear from him here shortly. PJ Capozzi is superintendent of Meridian 223 in Illinois. He is an award-winning educator and author of four recent releases, with two more coming out within the year. The names of those books are Student Voice, Making Evaluation Meaningful, Teach Smart, and Building a Culture of Support. You can find more out about PJ at his website, pjcapozzi.com. So I'm really excited to welcome you here tonight, PJ.
I'm excited to be here. Thanks for the opportunity.
You bet.
All right, we're going to get right to it. And PJ, if you would, just tell us a little bit about yourself and your experiences in education.
Absolutely. I started my career teaching in the inner city of Chicago. I taught there for 2.5 years. I never thought I was going to be an administrator. I think like most administrators, that's not the career path you set off with. But you get into the system and you see things that are broken and you want to fix. And so my intent was to do that. I wanted to stay in urban education, but I wasn't sure that I wanted to stay in Chicago. So I ended up in Rockford Public Schools, which at the time was the second largest urban system in Illinois. Was assistant principal there for 2 years. And then I intended to kind of go back home. I was from the suburbs. So I started applying for assistant principal positions back toward home. And along my route home, there's a town called Oregon that I had never been in, but I had seen the exit sign for several times, and they had a principal opening. So I threw my hat in the ring and was fortunate enough to be named principal there, 26 years old, went through process of working there for 4 years. And then I was recruited over to a neighboring district where I now serve as superintendent. It's my fifth year in Meridian. So I've done inner city to large urban to now small rural. So it's been a very interesting experience. I would have never at any point in my career said I anticipate being where I am 5 years down the road. It just kind of continues to evolve. So I find myself to be very fortunate. I've been in a number of incredible opportunities and been very fortunate to leverage those to hopefully do some good things for kids and advance my own career.
Well, thanks for the intro. And again, for being with us tonight, we're excited to dig in and talk about some evaluation things, some of your work that you've done. So again, we appreciate having you on Iowa Ed Chat.
It's awesome. I've participated in Iowa Ed Chat actually when my twins, I have twin toddlers. So when they were a little bit smaller, I had Sunday nights a little bit more free and was a little bit more frequent visitor. As they've gotten older, it's been a little bit harder to connect, as I'm sure many of people can relate to.
Absolutely. We appreciate you taking the time. So right into the next question, and feel free, audience members, if you have a question for PJ, don't forget to drop it on our Twitter hashtag IAEdChat, and we will ask the question for you. Evaluation is one of your recent books, and that's written about a lot. Evaluation is written about a lot. Why do you want to have your voice heard on this topic?
So I'm very passionate about evaluation simply because I think the dialogue and the narrative around it is pretty unfortunate. So right now in many states, this is kind of summative season and administrators are bogged down and teachers are stressed out and the narrative around evaluation has become about sorting. And my effort in this was simply to hopefully change the narrative to make it about something more meaningful, that it is our most systematic and best opportunity to really grow teachers. And the only way that we grow our school systems is by improving and supporting our teachers. So for me, diving in kind of as strongly as I could in evaluation is my attempt to kind of contribute to the profession. I've been talking and speaking about evaluation for nearly a decade. And when I started the process, I was one of the Danielson nuts and bolts guys. So I'm sure you guys have had different people come through districts and help teach you how to implement the framework. And I love Danielson. So I'm not trying to replace Danielson or replace Marzano. I just think that the way that it's being implemented has changed the conversation to much more about compliance and survival of the process, as opposed to making the process meaningful so that we can grow as an industry and as a profession. And so hopefully the work contributed in the book kind of gives some practical, tangible tips that people can take so they can move to the next level of their evaluation practice. But more importantly, I just hope it changes the narrative and the mindset that evaluation doesn't have to be this large, tedious, resource-hungry hoop that we jump through. It can really be about forming relationships, investing in other people, and hopefully thereby better serving kids.
Great stuff. So we were under the assumption that you wrote one book, but you're like banging out books like every month. It seems like you got two out now and then two on the way. So am I correct on that? Or do you got another one? You got a fifth one coming. I mean, I don't know.
So I, when I was a principal, I kicked out two kind of back to back pretty quick. And then when I switched over to superintendent, I took over a district that was in need of every ounce of attention. I could have used 26 hours in a day to work there. And so we've gotten things kind of righted a little bit. So more time has been put into writing. And so kind of got back on the horse last year with this Making Evaluation Meaningful book. And then had some opportunities to collaborate with some amazing people. So the Student Voice book is out with the hashtag Soup Chat guys that are all over the place. And also Illinois superintendents are really excited to be part of that collaboration. And then in the next 6 months, you'll see a collaboration come out with Rosa Isaiah Perez and Julie Adams. And I'm super excited about that one. It's talking about how the connection between Maslow and Bloom and how if we don't serve the Maslows first, we can never get to the Blooms. I think it's a really interesting take on something that everyone already talks about. And then later in the year, I have a solo effort coming out through ASCD that focuses on time management. And it's a really kind of interesting take because it's not really about education. It's more could be a crossover book to really anyone could pick it up and look at it. And the kind of the thesis of that is that time management isn't the issue. There's always an underlying issue. So I attempt to dig through what those underlying root causes and diseases of time management are, and then actually provide suggestions to treat that as opposed to the band-aids we typically give time management.
That's awesome. Thank you for talking about that and highlighting some of your pieces. So you sent this one this way to me, which I am extremely grateful for, in Making Evaluation Meaningful. So if people were to read this and change one thing about their practice after reading this book, what would that be? What would you highlight?
It's a great question. I think the number one thing I would hope would change for people is just mindset, is that it doesn't have to be a process about compliance. It can be a process about growth. And so in that, I think if there's two takeaways, one is I think that evaluators are usually on one of two ends of the spectrum. One is that we think we've got it going on and we're pretty confident in our evaluation abilities. And if that's the case, then I would really hope that we look at the technical aspect and how we treat pre-conferences, because in the speaking consulting role, I've been in from coast to coast, working with thousands of teachers and principals in evaluation. I think that the pre-conference is probably the most underutilized time that we spend together. So I'd focus on that if we have confidence. But I think the majority of evaluators I work with really do kind of lack confidence. And so the bottom line is that even the most novice evaluator can add value to the teacher through the process if we go through it with integrity and with heart and with an inquisitive mind and willing to ask questions. So if you are one of those evaluators that gets in the room and has a little bit of trepidation because you're not sure that you're really going to help this seasoned veteran quality teacher through the process, is that every conversation we have in schools, we have the opportunity to create change. So I feel like we're constantly planting seeds, and there's no better systematic way for us to plant seeds than through the evaluation process. And I just hopefully that that message takes hold so that people walk out of the process of reading the book or walk out of my workshops with a little bit more swagger toward the evaluation process. because it truly is meaningful if we make it so.
Yes, thanks for that. So if you would you dig a little bit deeper into the pre-conference? So you had shared with us that it's an underutilized time. People are going through that, you know, whether they are the person being evaluated or they are the evaluator conducting that conversation. What kind of things change within that pre-conference opportunity, or where are people missing out?
So I think that our typical pre-conference, I could probably walk into the majority of schools in the country and they're going to look pretty similar, where we're going to talk about what the students are going to be learning that day, what the processes are, where kids are going to be seated, what the assignment is, how the assignment aligns to the objective, how the objectives align to the assessment. So we're going to go through the typical pre-conference questions, and Danielson even lists some sample pre-conference questions in some of her work. And that's not bad. But typically what I see happen is this, is that we ask a lot of questions ahead of time. Sometimes we even ask for artifacts. Teachers take the time to write stuff up, send it in. A lot of times what we do is just regurgitate those same questions. And I think that's an insult to the teacher's time. And I think it's demeaning to the process. So what I encourage people to do is look at any question you ask as a what question and flip it to a why or how question. So for instance, a lot of people ask about differentiation. And I would say those are like the good evaluations. So when I'm looking at the, you know, the bell curve, the, you know, one standard deviation over, we're getting into differentiation. And a lot of times we ask, what is the strategy going to be used for differentiation? And we don't ask why is that important. We don't ask how. And so the reason the why and the how questions are so important, and I use this analogy a lot, and I don't know if it's good or not, but if we gave everyone in the world that had a fever an aspirin, a lot of people's symptoms would be remediated and go on and be fine. But there's a handful of people that the aspirin's not going to work. And so I feel like a lot of times when we're asking what questions, we only get enough information to therefore provide the aspirin. We're treating the symptom. We don't know the disease. So a lot of times when I get opportunities to work with schools and I ask the teacher the follow-up question, well, why do you do that? Or why is that important? Or how do you know that works? They can't answer those questions because they've never thought through the process. They're either modeling something that they saw from their favorite teacher, or that they're just doing a compliance thing that an administrator and evaluator had given them before. And if we want to make really lasting, meaningful change, we want to get into the hearts and minds of our teachers, we need to ask the why questions. So I would prefer that our pre-conferences look a lot more like a job interview. The questions that we ask a pre-service teacher that's coming into our district, we're going to say, why do you do these things? How do you know? What do you believe in? And if we ask those same types of questions during our most systematic opportunity to improve teachers, I think our industry and profession would be better off.
Yeah, absolutely. Creating those opportunities to reflect and to really question the practice and to be intentional within the practice. And I think, as you mentioned, you know, getting those hows and those whys, that really allows that opportunity to for that educator to think and to process of why it is we are differentiating in the first place, or why it is I have a certain seating arrangement as I do, or why we're even doing this activity or this lesson to begin with. So that's good stuff. Get people thinking. So I really appreciate your response there. So thank you, PJ.
Yeah, I think it's the same thing with kids too. So like we rant at our teachers all the time to make sure the kids are using their critical thinking skills. But sometimes the teachers are afraid to go there because we don't know where the conversation is going to go, and it's unpredictable. And I think that's the same thing we have to give up in evaluation, is if we're doing our job well, we believe the answer's within them. Our job is to ask questions to get them to find the answers within themselves and to probe accordingly and then provide the support where there's gaps.
I can hardly keep up. There's so many great things being shared tonight, PJ. So thank you again for being here. If people, let's zone in on just your Making Evaluations Meaningful book right now. If people read this book and changed one thing about their practice, what do you think it would be or could be?
I think there's a handful of different things that in different ways people can approach it. I think the pre-conference that we talked about is important. One of the favorite features of the book that in terms of feedback that I get, I didn't know if it was going to be well received in writing it, is I tried to crosswalk what we know between Danielson and Marzano. And then crosswalk out that with Hattie so that people can then leverage best practice. So best practice is a term that's tossed around all the time. I think evaluators sometimes struggle with exactly how to implement that and what to say and how to do it. So by kind of creating an explicit crosswalk between this is what research says is good, this is how it directly ties into the frameworks you're using, so that now you can give really research-based suggestions for improvement. So that, again, so that people can walk out with a little additional swagger, a little bit additional confidence that they can add value. And at the end of the day, both of the frameworks are extraordinarily robust, which is a strength and a weakness, right? So you give 22 areas where there could be an improvement. And Danielson, if everything's important, nothing's important. So if you hone in on a handful of different things, I think that this provides almost like a Cliff's Notes, for a lack of a better term, to take and understand the frameworks, take and understand what research says, and then use it to actually guide meaningful conversations.
All right, PJ. So how about something simple and tangible? Somebody's listening tonight. Maybe it's a principal tonight. Maybe it's a teacher tonight. Whomever is listening. What's something simple and tangible that they could take away and put into place tomorrow? They can kick it off Monday morning, and they can take something from tonight and they can put it into place.
So I love talking about this. And so it's just the acronym NERD. So NERD is easy to remember, right? So we can hashtag that if you guys want to, if people are listening. So at the end of the day, NERD for me is nugget, evidence, relevance, done. And so I see a handful of different ways that people communicate, both in writing and then in the verbal exchange during evaluation. And typically what we do is we're either very specific, targeted, almost offensively direct with our feedback, or we use a mountain of flowery language to bury the suggestion for improvement that the teacher never really picks up on because it's buried through all this flowery language. So I always encourage nugget, evidence, relevance, and then be done. So the nugget would be for instance, you need to increase the number of higher order questions asked during your lesson. The evidence would be, of 32 questions observed, only 3 were higher order. The relevance then is like, why is that important? And then, so this is important because dun, 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 or it links to our initiative, or we've talked about this before, or research says this is important, and then done. So in your feedback, it's very concise. And what I have found, again, is that confidence and that swagger and the ability to add value is that sometimes people don't know they're not confident in their ability to articulate things or to write effectively. So the acronym NERD just simply gives a format and a template for people to follow to grind through so that they can give effective written feedback. Now, obviously, is that enough? No, that things have to extend. But it does give a nice simple framework that anyone can use giving feedback, again, whether that's an informal, a walkthrough, or a formal summative observation evaluation.
So when we think about some of our participants on Iowa Ed Chat, a lot of our listeners, our viewers, our participants are teachers. What is the teacher role in making sure their evaluation is meaningful?
So the number one thing is mindset. And I know that it'd be easy if I was a teacher right now, I'd be like, all right, great, Kaposi, you taught for 2 years, you've been an administrator for 12 years, you're one of those, you've crossed over to the dark side. It's easy for you to tell me to make my evaluation meaningful when I'm dealing with incompetent, mean, lazy, whatever adjective you want to use about your boss. So I get it. There's a lot of imperfect principals out here. I was not a perfect principal. In fact, that's how I got into evaluation and writing about it and studying it, is because the way I used it my first year as a evaluator really damned the culture and climate in my building. So I get it. But the teacher does have, I believe, a responsibility in trying to make the process as meaningful as possible, and to try to learn and to try to pull nuggets of truth out. And so I say all the time when I speak is that even in the harshest critique, even if someone is just trolling you, even if they don't have your best interest in mind, generally in every critique, there's a kernel of truth. And so I believe that at minimally, there are ways to seek out and find value. And at the end of the day, if your building leader is not leading, then it is possible to lead up. And so the greatest teachers that I know have had a profound impact in my career, whether they've been intentional in leading up or it's just been natural to them to perform at such a high level and have really honest, frank, robust conversations with me. And so I think that the biggest thing that a teacher can do is just be their authentic selves, to allow administrators to see what is truly happening in their classroom on a daily basis. Because I will tell you this, the narrative that, public education is failing is just completely false. In the vast majority of classrooms, every given day, wonderful things are happening. So have confidence in what you're doing, but be real. Because if you're not being authentic, and the one opportunity you have to have systematic feedback given to you, the only person that you're doing a disservice to is yourself in terms of your own professional growth. And if we're not growing, then there's no way that we can keep pace with the ever-changing world we live in to service the kids that are dramatically changing. So if we're not taking advantage of our one chance to get authentic feedback, I think we're really crippling ourselves for future growth.
I think it's important to realize that evaluations are a two-way street. It's not just something that principals are in charge of. So I appreciate that. Thanks, PJ.
I think it's also important to note that when you look at the data nationwide, in most states, 98% plus of teachers are rated proficient or better. So as much as we fear this is that we're going to use as a sorting tool and it's going to sort us out for, again, in the 95 to 98%, most are 98% or above. In most states, that's just not what's happening, right? So it's if we can convince ourselves, if we can get ourselves mentally to a place that this isn't about sorting, then we won't conflate the fact that evaluation does two things, essentially. It sorts and it's our growth tool. Then we can really focus it on being about growth.
So let's talk about that for just a second before we get into the next question. Just follow up a little bit. So you said roughly 98% of evaluations come back, you know, very, very strong. And I think we all know that that's not the case. I mean, the teachers that we work with are exceptional, outstanding, whatever. But to say that 98% of them are performing at a level that we would expect, I think that's just false and we're lying to ourselves. So why is it? I mean, what is holding someone back from being authentic, being honest, and really doing the right work?
So I think that's I think that's a wonderful point, right? So the data is what the data is, but our system's designed to get the results it's producing. And so if we're saying that 98% of our teachers are proficient plus, and our schools are struggling, then obviously there's something going in it. I can give you a few examples from the work that I do. So one of the things that I do for districts is an evaluation audit. So I go in, I read all their evaluations from a specific evaluator, then I provide feedback on what they do well in writing. What I'll tell you is that whatever that benchmark is, that if you have 3+ needs improvement, you're a needs improvement teacher, that almost a statistically significant proportion will have 2. Or if it's 5, they'll have 4. So it seems like we go right up to that line without really wanting to have that hard conversation. So I think that there's a few things in play there. One is the fact that having those really hard conversations and having nothing happen about it, whether it be at the level up, whether it's AP to P or principal to assistant sub, HR, superintendent, if that happens, it's kind of once bitten, twice shy, right? So when people go through the hard work, have the tough conversations, put their political cap on the line, and then there's not support at a higher level, I think that makes it a really difficult conversation to enter into again and again and again. The other thing is that I think it's selfish. And so I'll just put it out there. When we choose not to have that difficult conversation, the only person we're choosing to serve is ourselves. We're basically forfeiting the person we're supposed to be serving, because as administrators, we're supposed to serve our teachers. Not having that conversation, we forfeit them the opportunity to grow because we're not giving them the real feedback, which is really sad and really frequent.
I appreciate that. Thanks for going there with that. And I really liked what you had to say about the selfishness. That is not something that I thought of, and that is a really great lens to look through. So I appreciate that. We have a question from our audience here, and this is from Alicia Kleppe. Alicia, I hope I pronounced your name correctly. She is a pre-service teacher. So her question is, what would your advice be to a pre-service education student who is getting ready to go into the field? First evaluations can be nerve-wracking, so any advice would be so much appreciated.
So I think that if the time where you are no longer nervous for evaluation, it's a bad sign, not a good sign. I still get nervous before my evaluations in front of the board. I get nervous before I get my evaluations when I go speak somewhere. So I think that nervousness is healthy, and don't lose that, kind of lean into that nervousness, because it should spur your growth. So what I would tell you is that you should be concerned about your performance and growth every single day we serve kids, not the day that we get evaluated. And so as a new teacher, that mindset that you want to grow and get better and seeking out help, there's no shortage of people in our industry, in our profession, that want to serve and want to help. So leveraging your veteran teachers, leveraging your principals, asking for help, asking for feedback. I think the problems happen is when we quit seeking feedback. So when we get nervous and we turtle up, we kind of go into our shell. That is really the only way that I think that you set yourself up for failure as a new teacher. So lean into that pressure, seek out help, and continue to grow. The fact that you're connected in a professional learning network like Iowa EdChat and contributing right now gives me the intuition that you're probably going to be just fine, because you're doing everything you can to grow yourself. At the end of the day, we have two choices in our profession. We continue to grow, or we start to die. So the day that you find that you no longer care enough to continue to grow is the start of the death of your career. So just continue that mindset. And that mindset is important regardless of the evaluation process.
Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you heard that. So continue to grow or start to die. Drop the mic, man. That was good. That's good stuff. So along that same line of just the nervousness that comes with evaluation. This next question that we've got for you fits that pretty well. So do you believe evaluation can be done really well when people are worried about their jobs? Can it really lead to teacher growth?
So I think that there's an issue, right? There's a fundamental issue when teacher evaluation serves two purposes. It's our paramount and primary source to grow teachers, but it also does sort teachers. And I know sort is a very blunt word, but it's essentially what we do. And so as long as those two things are conflated, I think this is, it's damning to the process. However, it is our world. And so I think, again, it's one of those things where you lean into it, you call it out and say, look, here's the deal. Like historically in my district, I've been there 5 years. In terms of evaluating somebody out, going through the remediation process and going through the process, it just hasn't happened. It's 0%. So having those real conversations about like, look, if you've been here for a while, you know whether you're a good teacher or not. Your principal knows whether you're a good teacher or not. This is about growth. That is lip service until it's not. So the only way it doesn't become lip service is through trusted relationships. And you either have those or you don't. And if you have them, the evaluation process builds relationships. I know it sounds crazy, right? So if you already have good relationships, actually going through, sitting down, talking to someone, learning about them, and then investing in them, and then conversely, if you're a teacher, having someone listen to you and invest in you builds the relationship. If you don't have the relationship to start, it kind of tears it apart. So I think that's always a good litmus test, and that's what I ask evaluators to do. Does the evaluation process help you get closer to your teachers or drive you further away? And if it drives you further away, it's probably not the evaluation process. It's probably the relationship building the other 174 days a year.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Andrew, are you going to jump in on a question?
Yeah, we do. And I've asked for some clarification. She has asked us a question, and maybe you guys being administrators will understand this question with rounding. I'm not sure if it's instructional rounds. But Kara Paulson says, what has been your experience with rounding and how has that impacted your conversations for evaluations? So instructional rounds, maybe?
So my experience with rounding, and I don't know if it's what she's going to do or my belief on how rounding works appropriately, is that typically rounding is done with a group of people, two or more, that go through and are looking for a particular thing. So one day it might be, again, higher order questions. The next time it might be teacher talk time versus student talk time. It might be objectives on the board, whatever the case is. The appropriate use of instructional rounding, in my opinion, is to collect a large amount of data for a group of people, not individual people, and then use that data to inform professional development at the building level. That's, to me, the pinnacle use of instructional rounding. It does a good job because it's obviously has some accountability metric for people in the classroom. It's targeted people, and then people know what the priorities are, and we can head in a certain direction. If she's talking about walkthroughs and just informals, that's a completely different thing. So if she's doing that, I can also speak to that.
She did give just a little bit more clarifying to the question. She's been talking about rounding in their conversations through her master's program in administration. And the HR director they were working with is having frequent conversations with those you evaluate or work with to have a temperature just beyond the evaluation period. So it looks like those you evaluate or work with to have a temperature just beyond the evaluation period. So maybe right outside evaluations just to kind of gauge where you are. I'm thinking that's what she's getting at.
Yeah, I mean, so again, if I think someone's going to use instructional rounding appropriately, it should be to collect kind of big data to then drive building-wide decisions. It shouldn't be small data, classroom by classroom. If she's talking about the informal or walkthrough process, so again, one of the issues with evaluation is that the vernacular is so interchangeable but means different things in different districts. But if it's the informal process of where you're getting feedback that's not directly part of the formal observation process, I think that can't be underscored as important enough. So again, just to use it in just a very human context, if the only time I'm talking to you about your performance in a professional manner is during the formal observation process, then I'm not investing in you enough and the process is going to be scary and stressful. But if we're having conversations about your instructional practices and how I can invest and support you 8, 10, 12 times a year, and you know exactly where you stand with me and you know that I think you need to work on your differentiation, but I really love the work you've done in questioning this year, then the evaluation, the formal process becomes really a conversation about growth. If not, again, it becomes a checkbox.
And I think that's where she was getting at, is outside of just those typical evaluation times. So Kara, thank you for your question. If we haven't quite answered it, let us know, reach out, and I would be happy to rephrase it for PJ.
Andrea, before you go on to the next one, I want to jump in with something, PJ, off the script, if you don't mind, huh? So this one, just talking about like the instructional round process, classroom walkthrough process, what I want to know from your perspective with walkthroughs and what you currently see, classroom visits, short 3 to 5 minute, maybe 10 minute visits that principals are regularly doing, with what you've seen in your consulting work within your district, in your experiences that you've had, what are we getting right? What is the system getting right in walkthroughs, and where are we going wrong?
So I think that time wins. And so to explain that, the more that you're in and the more the conversations are, regardless of what you're doing, the time wins. So it's just kind of time on task, right? Or to go back to the smoker work, the amount of time that kids spend reading and writing, it's just minutes. So minutes in the classroom and then minutes with follow-up conversation win the day. So I think that's the way oversimplification of a really massive complex issue, right? So I think that what isn't working is when we go in and we're a lot of us have been trained to just data mine and to take down as many pieces of data and then give that to teachers and then maybe have a follow-up conversation. That's not working. That's just taking up time, giving teachers feedback, which is data that isn't, I don't think, meaningful to them because a lot of times they don't know how to interpret it. I was in the classroom once and there's 24 to 25 kids were engaged. And then the teacher was freaking out because not all kids were engaged. I'm like, no, that's awesome. So when we're giving the feedback without context, I think it's struggle. So for me, I'll just say it simply, if it's worth your time to be in the classroom, it's worth the time for some type of face-to-face debrief. That's where the growth happens. The growth doesn't happen on paper. The growth happens as humans. So if we're not willing to invest in the face-to-face, then we can do as many walkthroughs or rounds as we want to. And all we're going to do is feel good about ourselves. And we're going to write it up in our evaluation saying we have this many minutes of contact time. The magic happens face-to-face.
Yeah, totally agree. So having that thought right now, and I want to run something by you, see what you think about this. So have a very comprehensive walkthrough form and find myself just in a minutia of data, and it's not driving instruction. It's not driving great feedback to teachers. It's kind of checking boxes, right? So my thought is this. What if I were to have a conversation with every one of my teachers, which is 35 of them, and say, you know what? When I visit your classroom, what kind of feedback are you looking for? And what's meaningful to you? And differentiate that walkthrough form or whatever that looks like to that particular person. I actually sent that out to my people yesterday. We'll kind of see how that goes to see where we go with that, but a very much a differentiated approach to giving that feedback and giving that visit a particular focus, if you will.
Yeah, I think that's brilliant. So a couple of things that what we do in our district currently is we focus on a singular component per walkthrough, or we call them informals, not walkthroughs. So for us, we're Danielson, 3C engagement is where we believe that we need to invest the most time because it's fingers in the most other things. So it doesn't mean that if there's a classroom management issue, we're going to ignore it. It just means that we're going to focus on one particular thing. And then we focus on the critical attributes so that we can have a real conversation. Our hope is at the end of a year or 2 years that we have a common vernacular and a common language that we can talk about engagement. Because I think engagement is, again, one of those things that we've been talking about in education for 20 years and everyone's definition of it is still different. So I'm not here to say that my definition is correct, but I want to make sure that my definition is my principal's definition, is my teacher's definition, and then we can at least have the conversation moving forward. The other thing which I'm seeing in some districts, and I just got back from working in a district in Wyoming that did this, they whacked 19 of the components of Danielson. They said they're only going to focus on three. So they figured the same way is that if we get great at these three, everything else is going to be okay. So I'm not encouraging doing that. I'm just saying that if everything's important, nothing's important. And so the more that we can, and again, I think that a lot of our struggles in evaluation comes down to evaluator confidence. So if we can provide our evaluators and say, instead of learning 22 areas of best practice and figuring out how to provide suggestions for improvement, all those things, saying, no, I want you to be masters of these three. I'm going to train you up on these three. I think it just changes the conversation.
And you talked about how evaluations have changed in the last 20 years. Switching gears, what is next in evaluation, in your opinion? So what do you think it's going to look like in the next 5 years, in the next 10 years, or what could it look like?
Video. So I think that the way it's going to look is a teacher is going to video themselves, and then they're going to meet with their teacher, their principal, no necessarily pre-conference, sit down, and they're going to analyze the tape together. And we're going to stop, and we do it while we're going to pause at minute 12 and say, why'd you ask this question? Did you see Tommy over there? And then we're going to actually kind of relive the lesson and actually have real meaningful And I think we're going to give teachers more direction over it. So I think that we've kind of gone to compliance, teacher accountability. I think we came over to one end. I think we're going to kind of bounce back. So I think it'll end up looking something like teachers video as many lessons as they want to. They find the one or two that they want. They send it into their, their evaluator. They have a robust conversation regarding that. And I think that's how we get to it really being about growth instead of gotcha.
So what you've just described reminds me a lot of what I did as an instructional coach, sometimes videoing with teachers. So this isn't on our topic, but I know that the relationship with teachers has changed in recent years in Iowa with a lot more instructional coaches. When you work in a building with an instructional coach, how can that relationship be strengthened for the teacher rather than having the teacher feel like they're meeting with this person and then this person and this person? Talk about how that could be strengthened for the teacher instead of just another meeting.
So I think that the what Dan kind of alluded to before, the more that we allow teacher voice into this process, the stronger it gets. So when they're guiding their own process and guiding their own growth, that's where we want to be. So the question becomes, how do we allow them to transform and provide their own kind of professional growth plan that we support and then provide feedback on? And that feedback truly serves as evaluation as opposed to this arbitrary process that we use really great frameworks, but again, arbitrarily decided upon frameworks that we're going to do onto somebody. So I think that instructional coaching is far more, well, I think the data plays this out, right? That instructional coaching is far more impactful than evaluation in terms of growing teachers. So the more that we can steal from that and go through, same thing with national board certification, right? So you talk to any national board certified teacher, they'll tell you that the video portion of the process was extraordinarily painful, but probably the most impactful on their growth. So I don't think video is new, but I think it's going to become the new norm in a lot of cases. And I think there'll be some hurdles, and I think that people will do it wrong because they're going to arbitrarily do it to the teachers, and teachers are going to be uncomfortable. But I think it'll kick back to where we kind of have the teachers steering us in support, which is the way it should be, because we can't, as humans, we do not create change in other humans. We create conditions for change. And so if we think of evaluation as that process, that evaluation is one big systematic approach to try to create conditions for other humans to change, I think we have an opportunity to be really great. If not, I think we're going to continue to spin our wheels, have the process conflated with growth and sorting. And I think that will be minimally meaningful if we don't break this cycle.
So in your conversation and your comments related to video, there is a great resource. Maybe you've read this book, PJ, and maybe you haven't been aware of it, but Jim Knight's Focus on Teaching, great book. And I believe it's chapter 5 is strictly on like evaluation and using video for that. So we've dabbled in that a little bit within our district here and within the building that I serve. And it changes the game. It changes the conversation, and it's making that conversation, that reflection, so much more authentic. Because, like you said, we're pausing at a minute 12. What's happening right now? You know, why did you choose to ask that question? You can get to some whys and hows pretty real and pretty in a pretty authentic way, and you can go through it together. So, but I think, as you said earlier, that relationship is critical. And that's not going to happen overnight. And you've really got to build that foundation to be able to get there into a place where this evaluation is going to be helping and nurturing that relationship as opposed to shutting it down. So I didn't know if you were familiar with Focus on Teaching, but I found that book to be extremely valuable.
Well, I think everything Jim Knight is awesome. I mean, like his workshops are great. We send our instructional coaches to them. So I think that in terms of coaching and leadership and development of teachers, I think Jim Knight is near peak of the game. I think that, and then just in terms of talking resources, in terms of software to support teacher evaluation through video, I think Insight Advance right now, I would say, is the forerunner in that. Not that other people can't do it, or you can't create your own through YouTube and Google Suite, but I think Insight Advance kind of has a leg up on that. But I want to go back to your, I think there's been a theme of relationships here. You can't fake caring, right? So like we say this to teachers, it's very apparent with teachers when they try to fake caring about kids, kids see right through it. Teachers see right through it as well. So if you're trying to leverage an initiative to try to gain 2% on a standardized test and trying to push teachers forward, you don't care about that teacher and they see it. Now, if you're having really robust, honest conversations with them, trying to grow them, then they know that you care about them. So again, like intent and purpose and authenticity where you're coming from, I think is the end game, right? So if you're truly investing in your teachers, you know, if you're truly investing in your teachers, and even if you screw up, they'll forgive you. But when you're doing arbitrary things, trying to push either an agenda or trying to push up one or two ticks on a standardized test measure, they see right through it too. And this process becomes much more convoluted and antagonistic.
I love that. Love that. You can't fake caring. So PJ, we're wrapping up. We're getting to the end here. And what we would like to ask to kind of close this thing out before we get to some closing comments is, if you could change anything in schools, what would that be?
That this is long. So I think that if I could change anything in school, so this is the way I describe it all the time, is that if we were sent, the three of us and whoever's participating, you know, on Twitter right now, if the 100, 200 people, the tribe of Iowa Ed Chatters, were flown to Mars and told to start school, we'd have some pretty good answers right now. The issue is that we can't bust tradition so violently that we abandon what it is. So we're stuck between, we know what the ideal model is, we have the traditional model, and trying to bridge that gap. So I think that there's a million things that we could dramatically impact and change in schools. But I think that the low-hanging fruit that we go to is just that that grades are meaningless. I think we know this. I think that that's the work that's been done the most. And I think the most people are far in advance, is that if we are in a learning business, we need to be in a feedback business, not in a sorting business. So it goes back. It's the same conversation, different markers that we're having with teacher evaluation: grades, sort, feedback, supports. And so if we can get into a place where we're giving kids feedback to grow, and where learning isn't optional, time is optional, I think we have a tremendous place to go. And so I think that as we go into it, and again, I want to be very clear here, personal learning as opposed to like the personalized learning, I think Will Richardson does great stuff on that. And then the work Rick Wormley is doing in standards-based assessment, I think those are the two leaders and thought leaders in terms of what the next era of schools is going to look like. But the challenge I'll leave everyone with is this, is that would you be happy if schools look exactly like they look today in 2028? And the answer is no. And if not, then we have to start leading change today, because it's not going to happen in 2026. We're not going to be able to turn it on. So we have to start having really difficult conversations. And I'm sick and tired of educators and educational leaders saying, well, I'm doing all these things to build political capital. Well, you build political capital to spend it on the right reasons and to serve kids. So at some point, we got to start spending it.
Yes, sir. That's awesome. So thank you so much for being here, PJ. We've got a few final things that we want to close up here. If you want to find PJ on Twitter, you can find him at MCUSD Soup, S-U-P-E. Find him on Twitter there. And go ahead and make sure you check out the archive tonight, because there have been some great tidbits that PJ has shared, some quotes from tonight's video. We will also repost this video. You can also go find a lot of information on PJ's website, www.pjcaposey.com. I'm going to go ahead and flip it back to you here for a closing. PJ, any final thoughts for you tonight?
I just appreciate the opportunity to come in and have a conversation. And I also appreciate just the fact of where we are at as a profession, that people are on Twitter at 8 o'clock on a Sunday night trying to connect and collaborate and trying to grow. I think it puts us in a really great place. And I think that I want to be very clear. The narrative that public education or schools are failing is absolutely false. That doesn't mean that we don't have the opportunity and the responsibility to change. Those two things can exist in concert. So I want to continue to push our thoughts so that we continue to change, but also have us move forward with confidence and the true belief that we are doing a wonderful job every day serving kids to the best of our abilities and truly changing the trajectory of kids' life on a daily basis. So I applaud all of our educators out there, and thank you for your service.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thanks so much, PJ, for all of your comments tonight. Good stuff. Enlightening stuff. Well, people, we're going to wrap up with a couple of upcoming Iowa regional and national events. First off, April 7th, 2018 is going to be Ed Camp Iowa. So we will be giving some information out fairly soon about what that is going to look like for Ed Camp Iowa. The Iowa One-to-One Conference coming up April 3rd and 4th. That is at the Iowa Event Center in Des Moines. And then you'll want to save the date for BC Ed Camp. That's in Benton Community. This is focused on teacher leadership at Benton Community Schools. That will be June 21st. And then special guest, our director of education in the state of Iowa, Dr. Ryan Wise, will be there. And then also the Keystones Premier Area Education Conference, or KPEC, that is coming up on June 18th and 19th in my hometown, Dubuque, Iowa. So you will want to check out that. That is a great conference to attend. And then to our listeners, if you have any events that you want us to highlight from a national perspective, from a state perspective, or from just a regional perspective, do let us know, reach out to us, and we will get those things shared. So wrapping this thing up tonight, thank you so much for joining us and sharing all of your thoughts on Iowa Ed Chat Live. Always the last Sunday of each month. It's always great learning with all of you. A very special guest. Thank you to our guest tonight, PJ Capozzi. And on behalf of Andrea and myself, thank you for joining us again tonight. So be sure to follow some of the friends you met and connect with them. And next week, we will be off. It is Super Bowl Sunday. We will be watching the Patriots and the Eagles, but we will be back February 11th with another great topic. So until next time, be the change. Good night, everybody.
Hey, everybody.
Thank you.